What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yep.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hour number two of the Rob Brown Radio Program begins now. Coming up on the show, I have given you so far four of my six keys to the Super Bowl on Sunday. I'm going to, in the next segment, run over the first four. And then in the final segment of this hour, I will give you the last two. Then tomorrow, we'll spend a little bit more time breaking those down. Lonzo and I will make our final and permanent locked-in Super Bowl predictions. We got Lulu Kessin joining us at 8 a.m. We will check in with Lulu to find out what's going on with the football team over in Columbia, South Carolina. We will check in on the women's basketball team. Lulu Kessin is embedded, I believe the word is, with Dawn Staley's team. She does the traveling. She covers this team extensively. So we'll check in and see where one of the best women's basketball teams in the country, despite the fact that many of y'all thought it was a rebuilding year. Turns out Dawn said, nope. We'll check in with Lulu Kessin at 8 o'clock. Rashad Beard ordinarily joins us on Thursdays at 8:40. He DM'd me late last night and said he's got a work meeting this a.m. at 9 a.m., so he's going to push until tomorrow. Says it should be the last time for a while that he's got to make that move.
Maybe he can show us what the new watch does, some of the gadgets. Maybe he's not allowed to do that.
Yeah, I was going to say. I think it's one of those I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you things out of America's Secret Agent Man, Rashad Beard.
He could show us launching something off his car out the back window. That would be pretty sweet.
We'll talk to Rashad Beard tomorrow, but we do have Hayton S. Mario at 9 a.m. We'll talk Super Bowl bets and Super Bowl breakdown with Mario at 9 a.m. It is Thursday, and you know what that means. Fight! Club with the great one coming up at 9:20, and the rest of the show belongs to you, dear friends, colleagues, and listeners. Right now also belongs to you because Lonzo and I are about to let you know everything going on in the world of sports that you will be talking about this morning when you get into the office. And we do that all when we do this. It is the Water Cooler Cheat Sheet, the top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office this lovely upstate Thursday morning and start talking sports with your boss, your manager, your coworker, whoever it is that you ignore your real job to talk sports with. This is what you'll be talking about. Let's dive right in with item number one. This one is not necessarily big-time news, but it is something I am very, very excited to hear, something I am very, very excited to see, and something I am very, very excited to watch. Clemson is taking on Duke coming up this Saturday at the Crib, Little John Coliseum, down there on the campus of the Tigers. and there will be a very special guest in attendance. Why? Who? The legendary Dick Vitale, baby, is on his way back. The last broadcast of Dick Vitale, April 3rd of 2023, when he broke down the San Diego State versus UConn national championship game. Ever since then, Dick Vitale has been fighting four different types of cancer that have kept him away from a microphone. Vitale was supposed to reemerge on the mic earlier this year for the Duke Wake Forest game back on January 25th. It would have been the first time on air since that April game in 2023, but went into the hospital after a fall in his Florida home. He has recovered from that. He has also announced that he is cancer-free and fully in remission at this point. And the legendary is Dick Vitale, Lonzo, the most synonymous broadcaster with any given sport in America? Like, is Dick Vitale more of the voice of college basketball than any other broadcaster is the voice of their sport? Because I think the answer is yes.
Oh, without a doubt. And the question is, I think, will there be another like him?
Dick Vitale is special and he's unique. And part of the reason why is I think Dick Vitale, who has been broadcasting college basketball games for effectively my entire life, not effectively, literally my entire life. I think the reason Dick Vitale is so special is because Dick Vitale, I think, and some of you old hats may have a different opinion than this. And if you do, I'm very curious to hear it. But my impression is that America loves Dickie V. Because Dick Vitale, I think, was the first broadcaster who didn't just inject an overwhelming amount of personality into his broadcast, but was the first to inject personality and a genuine passion and love for his sport into the broadcast. And obviously doing it in a sport that, while it obviously has a storied history, and while March Madness, I would argue, is America's second favorite sporting event behind only the Super Bowl, college basketball has also historically just kind of been one of the other sports, right? Like, it's always kind of been a secondary sport to the United States. Dick Vitale was so commanding, so demanding of attention on the mic, but more importantly, was never fraudulent. This may just be because I live behind a microphone, but I can tell, or at least think I can tell, when somebody on a mic is fraudulent, when somebody on a mic isn't really the person they're pretending to be, which is fine. There are some people in this industry who act. They play a character. They play a role. And that's okay. This is entertainment at the end of the day. For me, it's just easier to be my genuine, authentic self. As Lonzo can tell you, if you meet Rob Brown in a bar, I'm just as loud and obnoxious in real life as I am behind a microphone. I think Dick Vitale is so beloved by America because he has a genuine love and passion for college basketball, and he injects this over-the-top, lovable personality into the game while always promoting the game and never taking a step back. Even when he has an issue with college basketball, you can tell that he is attacking it from a place of love and concern, not of, let me grab some attention, let me get myself trending on social media. I would make the argument that Dick Vitale, more than any other broadcaster, is the voice of his sport. There's like a small number of guys I put into that category. I think Don Cherry was that guy for hockey for a very long time. I think Bob Uecker was that voice for baseball, although Uecker's kind of not in the same conversation because he was just the Brew Crews guy. Right? Like, he was representative of baseball at large, but when you heard Bobby Uecker, he was doing a Brew Crew game. Dick Vitale does everybody's games. He loves doing it. He has a passion. He injects it into everything, and he's got that larger than life personality. But he's like your buddy's grandpa that you just can't help but love. He's just too much fun but to love. I think that's America's love affair with Dick Vitale. I hope Dick Vitale broadcasts for 100 more years. Long live Dickie V, baby. You gotta be kidding me. Dick Vitale is the only guy that can show overwhelming love and support for one of America's least favorite programs, the Dukies. And we still love him. That's how much we love Dick Vitale. Dick Vitale on the mic this Saturday when Clemson hosts the Dukies at Little John on Saturday. Let's get to item number two. This isn't necessarily a news item, but I do think that considering the amount of weight that this individual holds in the public sports talk conversation and the fact that he was, or at least like he felt like he was, or it felt like he was, the linchpin of a lot of NFL stories over the past couple of weeks, I think it justifies giving him a spot. Deion Sanders decided to stay with Colorado. I don't know why I said it like I'm from Minnesota. Colorado, after the Dallas Cowboys showed interest in him for their head coaching vacancy last month. Speaking with former Cowboys star quarterback Troy Aikman yesterday down in New Orleans, Louisiana, Sanders reflected on the intensity of practices when he and Aikman were teammates in Dallas back in the early 90s and how it compares in today's NFL. And Deion said, and I directly quote, "I couldn't coach pro ball. That's why I say I couldn't coach. I know it was cute, but I couldn't coach pro ball because the way they practice, the way they go about it, I couldn't take it. As a man and as a football enthusiast, I care about the game. The game is still providing for Troy and I, so there is no way I could allow that to happen on my watch. That would be tough." End quote. Effectively, Deion said the way that football players at the National Football League today approach the game is just too different and unacceptable for the way that he approaches the game, and that's what kept him away from the jump to the NFL. Do you buy that? Do you think that that is legitimate from Neon Deion?
That and Dallas said, no, they're not going to draft his son.
That may be it. And he just doesn't want to throw his organization under the bus. I don't know if that's the case or not. Here's what I will say. I don't think Deion could have done it. I don't think he's got that level in him. I think Deion works very well at the college level. I've told you why 100 times. I think Deion Sanders works at the college level because Deion can go get all-star coaching staffs around him, can allow those guys to run the X's and O's. Deion can utilize his celebrity, and Deion can utilize the weight of his career in order to benefit the university from his name, image, and likeness, and also to influence young college players, which I will say above all else, the one thing I truly genuinely believe from Deion Sanders is when he says, "I want the best for the kids on my team." Now, not the kids that were on the team before he got there. Screw them, all 31 of them that he told could transfer and go find somewhere else to play. But the kids that he brings to Colorado, his boys, Deion's babies, I really do believe Deion wants the best for them. And nobody gives a damn about that at the NFL.
All right. I believe he could coach at the NFL if he goes to a place where he is all those things you just said. And not overshadowed by an owner or anybody else. He goes in and I think he could have done it in Jacksonville. I mean, there are places where he could go and he's not going to be overshadowed by anybody. He's going to be the guy.
I don't disagree that any room Deion walks into, he's the guy. All right, he's a charisma.
But not in
machine.
Dallas because of Jerry, but if he goes somewhere else where no one knows the owner, I mean, I know we know the owner of the Jags, but still, I mean, how often does Shad Khan even show up? The only time people talk about him is when the Jags are bad, which just happens
is a lot.
To be quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I think there are franchises he could go to, and I think he could exist and do well.
I don't disagree with the concept.
But
he's
king where he is right now.
I don't disagree with the concept of Deion being the guy. And in fact, I don't think he'd take a job anywhere where he didn't think he was going to be the guy. In fact, there is a part of me that believes part of the reason he wouldn't go to Dallas is because he knows no matter what Jerry says, Jerry can't help but be the guy. Jerry's the only owner I know that after every game has his own press conference. Every game, Jerry holds his own press conference. Why? Why? Why, Jerry? And I think Dion knows that. The only thing I disagree with Lonzo on, every other point I agree on except for one, I don't think Dion's a great X's and O's guy. I think he's a great coach. I bet as a defensive back and wide receivers coach, he would be excellent. As the head guy at the NFL, which I think comes with a load of coaching responsibilities that he probably doesn't have to worry about at Colorado. And on top of that, at Colorado, he can go get the Warren Sapps and all the ex-NFL legends that he has on his staff. And that makes a difference at the college level. Bringing Warren Sapp as the defensive line coach for the Dallas Cowboys, I don't know how much help that's going to be. Yeah, I mean, you'll have some guys that are like, that's Warren Sapp, I got to listen. But a lot of guys at the NFL, especially older guys, they're not necessarily going to be like, oh, that's Warren Sapp. He was great in the early 2000s.
Or you go, that's Warren Sapp. Look at his police blotter. Don't do that.
That's fair, too. I don't know.
I mean, that guy was a great defensive player. I think he has.
Warren Sapp was a monster.
Yeah, I mean, I think he could teach guys a lot. And his game would work just as well today as it did back when he was playing. So, I mean, the defensive tackle, that doesn't change that much. There might be some more techniques. It does change as far as athletes go.
This isn't necessarily about like Warren Sapp doing it.
He doesn't have to be and call plays or anything. That's what the offensive coordinator's for.
Again, don't disagree, but I also don't know that the star power of Dion pulls all-star cast to the NFL like it does pull at the college level. That's my only take. Either way, the point here was that Dion said the NFL is it's not what I left behind. It's not what I left behind, and therefore I'm not going to do it. And let's wrap it up with item number three. A flurry of moves go down yesterday. The NBA trade deadline is today at 3 p.m. We had three massive trades that went down yesterday. Yesterday early morning, right after we got off the air, the Bucks traded Chris Middleton to the Wizards, ending his tenure as one of their franchise cornerstones in a multi-year deal that sent Kyle Kuzma to Milwaukee, according to a Shams Wow. Yeah, we're sticking with that. The Bucks also sent rookie guard A.J. Johnson, their first-round draft selection last year, and a pick swap to Washington, who then dealt Patrick Baldwin Jr. and second-round draft compensation to Milwaukee as well. As part of the deal, the Knicks are sending Jericho Sims, break the walls down, over to the Bucks in exchange for Deion Wright and cash. Wasn't the last trade that got made. Dalton Connect, Cam Reddish head from the LA Lakers over to the Charlotte Hornets in return for the 23-year-old 7-foot-tall, and you can't teach that, Mark Williams. He will now be the big man that plays in between Luka and LeBron James in the new look Lakers, who, by the way, have won 8 out of 10, look real hot, and they're about to get better. Keep an eye on the Lake Show. And we wrapped it up last night when Jimmy Butler left the Miami Heat and is the newest member of the Golden State Warriors. He will be paired up with Draymond and Steph Curry in Golden State. Of all the trades that got made yesterday, the Lakers and the Warriors won. The Lakers and the Dubs won. The Lakers got their 7-footer. They got a young 7-footer. I was worried they were going to go grab like a 32, 33-year-old veteran that was going to be on his way out with LeBron. Instead, they grab a guy with a ton of upside who's only 23, can grow with Luka Doncic, who is going to be the face of the Lakers when LeBron retires. Like that move a lot. I do like the move for the Hornets, too. We talked a little bit about this back in hour number one. You can listen to that hour if you missed it by going to thefanupstate.com, clicking on the podcast button, dropping it down to the Rob Brown Show, and listening to the 6 o'clock hour. I think Charles Lee is building something very gritty up in Charlotte. I think this is going to be a hard-nosed basketball team, and Dalton Connect fits that mold exceptionally well, so I like that trade as well. And Jimmy Butler next to Steph Curry, it is, to me, a frightening 1-2 punch. We'll talk about those trades, the impact on the association later on in the show, and more. Rob Lonzo and you, the Rob Brown Show. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Fan Upstate. Oh, is that me playing that? No, that's not me, is it? Oh, I thought I was panicking for a second. That's a tribal chief. All right? The one's up. The tribal chief has spoken. Lonzo's going to be a happy guy on Monday.
That just auto-played, and I thought you were playing it because I sent it to you. So I'm like, why is he playing it over and over again? And it was auto-playing. Stupid auto-play. It worked, though.
The tribal chief has spoken. It's scripted. It's a work. It's predetermined. Lonzo's going to be celebrating another Super Bowl on Monday. Or you know, sometimes you got to swerve. Sometimes you got to let the plucky under. Sometimes Sami Zayn's got to win one. All right?
Yeah, but not a championship. I mean, not a major championship.
I mean, sometimes he's got to get one. Otherwise, it's unbelievable, you know? We'll see. Hey, speaking of the Super Bowl, I have given you four of my six keys to the Super Bowl so far. I have given you four of my six. I would like to give you the first four so far in truncated form. We're going SAT words on the show today. Item number one for the Super Bowl. The Chiefs, it's not stop Saquon Barkley, it's limit Saquon Barkley. I pointed out in the AFC title game, James Cook was cooking the Kansas City Chiefs. My man ended up with 13 carries and 85 yards. The problem was they took him out of the game in the fourth quarter. In a one-score game, in a game the Bills were still very much capable of winning, they stopped with James Cook. Philadelphia is not going to stop with Saquon Barkley. They might get down 14 points, and they're still going to give the ball to Saquon. Obvious passing downs aren't obvious passing downs for the Philadelphia Eagles when Saquon Barkley is in the backfield. If you are the Chiefs, I don't know how you do it because nobody else has figured it out yet either. But you got to limit that cat. You cannot let Saquon hit his over number of 111.5. Probably going to go up by Sunday. The Bills' run game was not as good as Philly's. And when they were utilizing it, they were getting the Chiefs. In fact, when the Bills were ahead or tied or right in that range, it was because of the run game. Both the success of it and the fact that the Chiefs were having to account for James Cook. And when they were accounting for James Cook, they were not able to throw extra resources at Josh Allen, and Josh Allen was able to be Josh Allen. Once James Cook came out of the game and he wasn't him anymore, Josh Allen was a little bit more free, or was a little bit less free, pardon me. It was easier for Spags to get guys on him, and that game turned on its head. Key number two for the Philadelphia Eagles. It's beat the blitz. Steve Spagnuolo, as we pointed out yesterday, the Chiefs have the 13th highest blitz rate in the NFL. It's just above the average number of blitzes per series of any team in the NFL. But it feels way higher than that. Why does it feel way higher than that? Because Spags doesn't just blitz for the sake of blitzing. Spags blitzes when he sees that a tendency is going to come into play. Josh Allen has a tendency on high-pressure situations to automatically leave the pocket. And that makes sense. Josh Allen is one of the best mobile quarterbacks in the National Football League. Can't get sacked if you run away from guys. And I will take Josh Allen one-on-one against most NFL players. Not all, but most. I will not take Josh Allen 2-on-1. Two defenders versus one QB. And what did Spags do on that fourth down that ended up being an incomplete pass that ended the game? Spags said Allen's tendency in this situation is to roll out to the right before the pass rush even gets there. So what did Spags do on that play? He had his defensive end work to the outside, seal off the tackle. He had his outside linebacker blitz off him, and he had the cornerback on the far, or excuse me, the safety walked up on the far side also blitz. So when Allen rolled out to his right before he got across the rear end of his offensive tackle, there were already two red jerseys waiting for him out there. Spags knows tendencies and blitzes to them. If you are the Eagles, you have two options here. Number one is you can spend the time watching your film, you can recognize your tendencies, and you can call a game plan that goes against those tendencies to try to catch Steve Spagnuolo off balance. However, I don't think any team wants to stop doing the things that got you where you are. Even if they are just tendencies, they're tendencies usually because they're what you're the best at, what you're most comfortable with. The other option the Eagles have is to be perfect. To be perfect. If you know your tendency is to roll Jalen Hurts out to the right, then you had better be perfect in your blocking game to the right to make sure that those Spags blitzes aren't as effective. That's not easy, but it's the Eagles' way. Got to beat the blitz, and you got to do it by being fundamentally perfect. Key number three to this game. Kansas City has got to have a quick pass game. Mahomes, as much as he wants to, and as good as he is at extending plays, buying himself extra time in the backfield by escaping, scrambling, and improvising, he can't do that against these Eagles. Why? Because Jalen Carter in the middle is a double team eater. You do not have an additional blocker when Jalen Carter's at the nose tackle. And on top of that, because he does play more often than not a true nose tackle lined up one technique or zero technique over the center, Jalen Carter can go left, Jalen Carter can go right, and the guard on that side has got to be aware. Because if you leave Jalen Carter one-on-one against the center, I don't care if you have the best center in the NFL, Jalen Carter is going to win that battle enough times to impact the offense. So, with him there, knowing that guards can't really be all that creative and fluid, they kind of have to take the rock back block. They've got to kick back and go eyes to the inside. Make sure Carter's not coming. And then find who else is a threat to the B or the C gap, depending on what side they're on. That opens up Philly. Philly does not blitz a lot under Vic Fangio because they don't have to. Because Jalen Carter eats a double team every play. And beats it a lot of the time, by the way. But he eats a double team every play. The guys around him are very adept at figuring out where that double team is, attacking that spot with a base pass rush. And oh, by the way, they set edges remarkably well. Mahomes scrambling and improvisation is ordinarily based around his ability to get outside of the edge, to get wide of the defensive end, to get out into the flats, and then do Patrick Mahomes things. The Eagles do not let a lot of quarterbacks get outside of the defensive end. How do you negate that if you're the Chiefs? Quick passes, bubble screens, inside slants, crosses, quick passes. Mahomes needs to have, in my opinion, an average time to release of 2.5 to 3 seconds maximum. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, ball's got to be out. That's it. If he is able to develop a quick strike rhythm, we're getting the ball out and we're getting it out quick, then the Eagles' edge rush is to some degree negated at that point. At that point, the Eagles' edge rush now has to start to be more aggressive. Now they've got to start running slants. Now they've got to start running twist. Now they've got to start running stunts. The defensive ends now have to start actually working against the offensive tackles. It's not just contact, sit down, set the edge, keep Mahomes pinned, work to the inside. Now they may have to cross the face of the defensive tackle, which means Fangio has got to start sending the linebackers off the outside. If they start sending linebackers to set the edge because the defensive end has to work to the inside, now all of a sudden, that's prime Travis Kelce time. That's prime tight end dump time. That's a spot that I think they have to be very, very careful with. So the keys to the game so far: slow down Saquon Barkley for the Chiefs. Beat the blitz if you are the Eagles. Get rid of the ball if you are the Chiefs. I got a couple more for you. And I'm going to tell you what they are as we wrap up hour number two. I want to know your key to the game. What is the one thing that the Eagles must do or that the Chiefs must do if they are going to win this game? 844-326-3663. 844-FANFONE. Shoot me your text. Put Chiefs and then their key to the game, or put Eagles and their key to the game. I'll give you my final two when we come back. I'll also run you through what you guys think are the most important things in Super Bowl licks. Rob Lonzo and you, the Rob Brown Show continues after this. It is the Fan Upstate.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I have recapped the first three of my six keys to the Super Bowl licks this Sunday. Number one, slow down Saquon Barkley if you're Kansas City. Number two, do not be predictable and fundamentally beat the blitz if you are the Eagles. Number three, Kansas City, fast strike passing offense. Get rid of the ball. Get rid of it quickly. Number four, this one for the Philadelphia Eagles. Feed A.J. Brown. This guy, even though after the drama a handful of weeks ago where A.J. Brown vented his frustration about the Eagles passing attack on a podcast, and it led to just about everybody in the country having an opinion on the Philadelphia Eagles passing offense. It led to just about everybody in the country going, uh-oh, they're imploding. They figured something out after that. The Eagle passing after offense after that got a lot better. But A.J. Brown has still, in my opinion, for as talented as he is, A.J. Brown has still been an underutilized resource for the Philadelphia Eagle passing attack. And I do not think that anybody on the field is going to be more important to Philadelphia this weekend than A.J. Brown. Why? The answer is A.J. Brown is a man-to-man cover wizard. A.J. Brown is as good as anybody else in the league when facing man-to-man coverage. His efficiency rate when man-to-man coverage is applied is inside the top five in the NFL. He is just a guy that you cannot put on an island. Why is that important for this game? Because the Chiefs are primarily a man defense with a cover one on top of it. The Chiefs like to drop one guy back, one single high free safety to play center field. They are going to man up every other person on the football field, and they are going to shade to the best players. A.J. Brown is going to get a lot of man-to-man single coverage this weekend. That's his bread and butter. That's his thing. That's what he does. And here's the thought. Even if A.J. Brown is not getting a ton of targets, because Kansas City has shadowed A.J. Brown, they got him in the single high or the man-to-man with a single high, perhaps the single high shaded to A.J. Brown's side, much like we talked about earlier, that Jimmy Butler is the perfect guy to pair up with Steph Curry, not because of what Jimmy Buckets can do with the ball, but because of what Jimmy Buckets can do when Steph has the ball. Defense draws to the whatever side Jimmy Butler's on, right? And therefore, the floor is, by default, opened up for Steph Curry. It's the same thing with A.J. Brown. When A.J. Brown is playing an outside X position, and it is a man coverage scheme like the Chiefs like to run, they're going to take the single high. He's going to play a couple of yards shaded to A.J. Brown's side. A.J. Brown is going to, more often than not, is going to beat in a straight route his man-to-man cover. which means that the single high or the second back, if they do decide, because Kansas City will occasionally shift to a Tampa 2, if they shift to that, whoever is dropped back on his side of the field or shaded to it has got to roll over and help cover up A.J. Brown. And if they've got to roll and help cover up A.J. Brown, what does that mean for me? Now, all of the sudden, the Eagles have some other dudes that come into play. The Eagles have some guys like Devontae Smith, guys like Jahan Dotson, guys like Dallas Goedert. You know what Dallas Goedert's number is? That's the tight end for those of you that are maybe beginning to familiarize yourself with one of our two Super Bowl licks contenders. Dallas Goedert's the tight end for the Eagles, and he is a very good pass-catching tight end. He's not, I mean, he is a yak guy, but not like massive yak. Not yak like Travis Kelce puts down. His number has been flirting with 60 receiving yards in this game. I honestly believe that's in large part because of A.J. Brown. Because if the Chiefs are locking up A.J. Brown in man-to-man coverage, A.J. Brown starts to run underneath crossing routes. Underneath, because that's how you get your wide receiver with a step on the DB. That's how you get him where a quarterback can just throw a lead, and it's an easy snag. But on top of that, if they start to show a preference to A.J. Brown in terms of their defensive coverage, it is in that spot that Dallas Goedert does what great tight ends do. Go fill that zone. Go find the vacated area of the field. Go sit in it. That's what Dallas Goedert does. So you got two options here. You can feed A.J. Brown in that man-to-man coverage because he is regularly beating defenders and you can take care of him. Or you can get him a couple of targets, show the Chiefs that you are absolutely paying attention to him, wait till they begin to roll either the single high or the Tampa 2 high coverage over to A.J. Brown, then run him out of an area, run Dallas Goedert into it, and wango bango, your tight end's putting up 60 yards. A.J. Brown has got to be a dude. That's key number four. Key number five, this one goes back to Kansas City. And I think this is a big one. Kansas City has to do what Kansas City does, whether it makes the fans mad or not. Kansas City has got to win in the numbers games. I am talking about turnovers. I am talking about penalties. Check out these numbers. When it comes to the Kansas City Chiefs, the Chiefs, and this is going to be a conspiracy theory peak for many of you, the Chiefs lead the league with the fewest penalties per game. They were penalized 5.4 times per game. That is the second fewest penalties per game in the 32-team NFL. You know who the second least penalized team in the league was? The Philadelphia Eagles, 5.9. They got one half of a penalty more than the Kansas City Chiefs. One of the things that Chiefs fans have been screaming ever since this Chiefs refs conspiracy theory began was that the Kansas City Chiefs, I think it's 12 consecutive playoff games, where the Kansas City Chiefs have had fewer penalties than their opponent.
I wonder what happens if you eliminate false starts thanks to one certain tackle.
My bet is that number goes from like 5.4 down to like 4 or 3.5. I bet it goes down closer to 3.5. Now, I will say this. Great one. As somebody who watched the overwhelming majority of your games, just in case I was watching the three-peat, I wanted to make sure I was there for it. Earlier in the season, the NFL had a point of emphasis of false starts for tackles who got that first kick or illegal procedure or illegal formation when tackles had their helmet behind the hip of the center, right? That was the point of emphasis. Early in the year, in fact, I go back to week one, I recall you and I having a conversation that it might be a long year for Kansas City because in the opening weeks, the refs were definitely calling your couple of players for false starts and for illegal formations. It was week one, I think, and I could be wrong. I think it was week one, and I don't remember who you guys handed at left tackle in that game because you guys have rotated freaking offensive linemen all year long.
Because of injury.
Yeah. I don't remember who was in at left tackle that game, but I do remember they got like four false start calls in week one. And that was a spot where I came in on Monday and I was like, Zoe, your offensive line coach had better get to work or it's going to be a long season. That didn't keep up. That didn't hold up because the Chiefs, and this is the one spot where I will be, and I'm curious if the Zoe agrees or not. I do think the Chiefs were allowed to fall back into that old tendency of left tackle getting early kick on pass pro. I do think that that went back. I think the refs kind of got tired of calling it because it did. And in week one, we all talked about it. It bogged that game down a lot.
As far as camera angles go, I don't know if they purposefully made sure that they didn't show a camera angle where you could see if that particular tackle was false starting or not. But you didn't see it very often going forward. It still happened during the season.
Oh, 100%.
Trust me, it still happened when you hear false start. Automatically, you know who it is.
The reality is,
So you don't believe for a second that possibly he got better at it?
No, because I have a television.
Okay. Well,
and eyeballs.
Well, you're watching that all 12 angle that nobody else is watching. So no,
not for regular Sunday NFL games. Okay. They don't give me that in game.
I mean, we could go in depth, and you and I, every day, well, we only have one more day after the day, we could go in there and sit down and watch every Chiefs game, every play, every offensive play, and you can show me all the times that he moves. I mean, and that would prove your point.
Genuinely be happy to, because it is absolutely something that continued to happen. But that's not necessarily the point of the conversation. The conversation is Kansas City's
got
to win
that margin. It's not real, and you're wrong.
No,
you're just a hater.
It's definitely real. Hater. I'm not a hater. I picked you to win.
You can hate and still try to win money.
That's also true. I think that the penalties, Chiefs have to make it game 13. It has to become 13 consecutive games where Kansas City is less penalized than their opponents. I also think it's the turnover margin. You know what else the Chiefs had the fewest of in the regular season? Turnovers. They had the fewest turnovers in the league. They don't hand the ball off very often. Neither do the Eagles. One of the things that I think makes this game very interesting to me is that you absolutely, empirically, statistically, have two of, if not the two, most disciplined and fundamentally sound National Football League teams. Neither of these teams makes a lot of mistakes. Neither one of these teams has a lot of turnovers. Neither one of these teams is penalized very often. I think Kansas City still has to make sure that they are ahead in those two margins, turnovers and penalties. That's what's made Kansas City special so far. They'll let you beat you. Buffalo beat themselves in the AFC title game, and the Chiefs were just there to sink the dagger. That's what they've done all year. That's why Kansas City doesn't cover, because they don't come out and necessarily feel like they have to dominate you. They just come out and go, you're going to make a mistake, and I'm not. And when you make a mistake, I'll throw the haymaker. And if you don't make a mistake, then we will win by 3. And if you do, we'll win by 7. It's been that way all year. Final key to the game. This is a guy whose name Lonzo said earlier in the week. This is a conversation that Lonzo brought up earlier in the week. And I think he hit the nail on the head. The Eagles have to successfully run the ball with Saquon. The Chiefs have to stop it. I think the other side of that conversation is the exact same thing, Lonzo. I think the unspoken hero of this game could very much be Kareem Hunt. I think it very much could be an exclamation point on the redemption arc of Kareem Hunt. Look, he's not Saquon Barkley. Nobody's arguing that he is. But
who's Saquon's backup?
Saquon Barkley, well, they usually go, I don't want to say platoon behind Saquon. The backup running back primarily is Ken Gainwell, although we did see a young man by the name of Will Shipley break out a little bit in the NFC title game.
But think about Kareem Hunt, Pacheco.
Isaiah Pacheco's back there, too.
P. Ryan.
Isaiah Pacheco's back there, too.
P. Ryan scored a touchdown against Buffalo. So, I mean,
Will Shipley scored a touchdown against
Washington. I'll take P. Ryan over Shipley right now. Shipley has an upside.
That's fair.
But P. Ryan's been there for a long time.
I wouldn't disagree with that.
And this is a Super Bowl and might be some nerves.
I would absolutely say at RB1, obviously the check mark goes to Philly.
It does.
As RB unit, as in what happens if guy one can't do it, I would say Kansas City takes the check mark. That being said, I think Kareem Hunt has got a little bit of bleep you America left in him. I think this is a game that Kareem Hunt is going to look and go, yeah, Saquon's good, but I'm here too, buddy. And what I cannot have for key number 6 is the Philadelphia Eagles having that beep, 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 beep sight finder locked in so much on number 15 that they forget Kareem Hunt is back there and he goes on a couple of scampers. Because if Kareem Hunt is able to put up 75-80 himself and just be in the neighborhood with Saquon, a lot of the rest of that falls
just
to Patrick Mahomes.
Just keep in mind, and I've said this before, I'm going to say it again, but let me give you a different angle. Have you ever left somewhere and then where you left just started flourishing and just doing things that you're like, why didn't they do that when I was there?
Yes.
That's Kareem Hunt. I mean, he screwed up and he got let go.
Yep.
And he's able to make his way back. But while he was gone, the team went to the Super Bowl a couple times, got some rings, and he didn't get one. Because he screwed up.
Yeah.
And now he's got a chance to make up for that team-wise and do something that he wasn't able to do before.
Yeah, the redemption tour of Kareem Hunt has been interesting to watch.
And that doesn't happen if Pacheco doesn't get hurt.
I don't disagree with that either. What I do think is if there is a player on the field for either team that I think you could go, that's the guy that motivated, yeah, everybody on the Chiefs to get the three-peat, yeah, everybody in the Eagles to stop them. Nobody wants to be the footnote in history that you were the team that lost and gave Kansas City the three-peat. But if there is a team, or if there's a player on either team that has a personal motivation that I think manifests in this game, I think it's Saquon Barkley to give the old back to the Giants, and I think it's Kareem Hunt to make up for the lost time based on his own bad actions and behaviors. As much as I said key for Kansas City number one is to limit Saquon Barkley, key number 3 for the Philadelphia Eagles, in my opinion, is do not let Kareem Hunt get lost in the sauce while you're focused on Patrick Mahomes. There's my 6 keys. What are yours? 844-326-3663. Sports Flash.
A flurry of moves across the NBA as the deadline approaches at 3 p.m. today. Yesterday, the Miami Heat traded Jimmy Butler to the Golden State Warriors in a multi-team deal. The Warriors were making a push for Kevin Durant, who informed them, nah, I ain't doing that. Butler will decline his $52 million option in favor of a 2-year, $111 million deal. Andrew Wiggins, Kyle Anderson, and a 2025 first-rounder will go to Miami in return, while Dennis Schroeder will go to the Jazz, and Utah sends P.J. Tucker to Miami. New Orleans Pelicans have sent forward Brandon Ingram to the Toronto Raptors in return for Bruce Brown, Kelly Olynyk, and a first and second rounder. Ingram has been out since early December with a sprained ankle. Make sure you tune in Saturday at 4 p.m. as Furman Paladins take on the Chattanooga Mocs. It's Furman versus Chattanooga right here on your home for Furman Paladins basketball. The Fan, Upstate.